It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The university. Undoubtedly the one place where the free exchange of ideas meets with intellectual vigor and civility.
You are disgusting! Slap your racist mama!
The university is ours. Expect resistance to anyone who opposes us.
There will be resistance, and it will not be peaceful.
Free speech is free on campuses unless you're hearing ideas you don't like.
Resistance to violent hate speech is not another act of hate. It is an act of love.
Free speech was never meant to protect love speech. That's not the point.
Humans don't really like freedom of speech. They definitely like their own freedom of speech. They don't necessarily like your freedom of speech that much.
It is ideological fascism. You must be one of us or you're unwelcome.
We live in very bleak times with a whole lot of conformity and a whole lot of cowardliness.
Whether you're left or right, if you're honest, the First Amendment is under assault today.
Do we need $600,000 of security to hear all of that?
The universities are so overwhelmed by this that I can't see how they can extract themselves from it.
We should probably pick cabins to do these speeches versus college campuses. We should go speak at the Unabomber Shack.
This becomes tyrannical, man. You can't even make a joke without worrying about being crucified.
Isn't it spooky you were having this discussion?
Are you testifying in front of Congress?
I am.
Why are you testifying? What have you done?
Do we get to keep these pads?
Whoever told you you only had to hear what didn't upset you?
I want every student on campus to be physically safe. But if you mean emotionally safe, I don't know why you're in college.
If you want to feel good, get a massage.
It's oppressor versus oppressed, and you're a hero if you're on the side of the oppressed.
Do not choose the side of the oppressor!
You cannot be happy if you think yourself a victim.
We don't agree with Mr. Prager's views at all.
We have common sense in common, and that means we have everything in common.
When's the movie coming out again?
All right, that's a trailer from the new movie called No Safe Spaces. If you haven't heard about it yet, it's because it isn't probably yet in your theater. We're going to talk about that. You heard the voice of Adam Carolla and the voice of Dennis Prager, who are the co-hosts of this particular movie. Listen, we talk about this all the time, do we not? We talk about the loss of free speech in various ways. Most recently, we've been talking about it in social media. We've talked about it in European hate crime speech codes, which are spreading through Google and Facebook and Twitter, and of course on college campuses where we've watched Antifa and rioters, and we've watched conservative students punished. We've watched their speech silenced and shamed. We've watched little free speech zones where people have to stand in boxes in order to actually say what they think, you know, blocks away from where the action is happening. We have watched as our First Amendment rights to complain about King George and talk about our faith or lack of it or our disagreement on issues has been stripped away, especially on college campuses. And as the byline of this movie says, what happens on campus doesn't stay on campus. It spreads like a cancer. It is happening right now. Again, the movie's called No Safe Spaces, and the producer, Mark Joseph, joins us from Los Angeles this morning. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Mark, let me just tell them something. I want to talk about you more personally in just a second, but you've produced a lot of movies. I would be curious, you know, I think all of us who are creative or do radio or whatever we do, there are certain things that grab our attention that we've experienced or hit a nerve with us. with you, what was the nerve that was hit in you about this topic and subject matter?
You know, I think part of the issue here is that I spent a lot of time overseas. I grew up in a foreign country, and even though I was an American citizen, and people don't realize what we have. We take it for granted what we have in the U.S., the ability to say whatever you want. You know, in the film, Dennis talks about when we were kids, we would say something and our friends would, you know, say, somebody would say something and we would say, what's freedom of speech? I can say whatever I want. And that is a really foreign concept for a great deal of the world, even for democracies. There are certain things you can't say. And so really, I think maybe having an appreciation about America from having lived overseas and realizing that those freedoms are really, really easily lost. And Dennis has a thing in the film where he talks about the whole point of the First Amendment isn't to protect love speech. It is to protect hate speech, things that we find hateful or distasteful. And we have a lot of case law about that, whether it's back to Skokie or that's the whole point, right? There's no need to have special protections from the government for speech we agree with. It's precisely the speech that we find disagreeable that we have to combat. And also, I think there's a great danger in driving crazy people and crazy ideas underneath the rug. We almost want them to be airing their crazy ideas in the culture so we can answer them back. And when people have crazy ideas that make no sense, it's really best to have them aired in public and then let them be answered. And so the solution to offensive speech isn't to shut it up. It's really to allow it to be aired and then give effective answers back to it.
Well, I completely agree, Mark. It was interesting because this week I was interviewing a Russian attorney who is getting her PhD at Moscow State University, but she got her undergrad law degree at Yale. So she's been here. She understands American culture, but we were talking about social media and free speech, the whole notion of Facebook censoring the things that we say and Google, you know, changing their search engine or doing whatever it is they do to make certain things pop up and certain things hidden. And I got actually into a discussion with her on the First Amendment and free speech. And of course, she's very bright and she understands intellectually, but her whole background was so different that I found myself trying to explain to her what it means to be able to, what free speech really means here. We have to explain it to our kids, too. It isn't about, really, it's not about being able to, the point with the Founding Fathers was not that you could use any kind of vulgar language you wanted to and
right.
say anything offensive you wanted to and nobody can stop me. It isn't that. It was the right to complain about our leaders, the people that ruled over us, to overtake them, to criticize them. To build coalitions against them, and it was also about our right to express our faith, in particular in Christ at that time, but anybody's faith, our lack of it, our ability to just be free about our thoughts, our convictions. And so it's interesting it is to explain that to someone from another culture, Japan included, because I know in Japan, I skipped over, it is Japan that you grew up in, and I actually...
Right.
Spent some time there too. And I remember, Mark, that, well, is it true? I was told that one of the most common sayings in Japan is that the nail that sticks up shall be pounded down.
That is correct. That's right. And Japan is a free society, but you really don't want to spend too much time. Folks that have been very, very critical of the emperor, you know, that's an uncomfortable position to be in. And whereas we have a tradition in our country, you know, I remember especially during President Obama's time and even now during President Trump's time, people would say, well, that's, you know, if you criticize the president, you know, that's racist or whatever. But really, there's a long tradition of us criticizing our presidents. And I almost think it would have been racist for conservatives not to criticize President Trump as if he did, or President Obama. Part of the American tradition, you know, there's an old joke. I'm sure you've heard it about the Soviet citizen who was arguing with the American citizen. He says, well, I have freedoms in my country, too. And the American says, well, I can go to the White House and pound the president's desk and say, I don't like the way you're doing your job. And back then, the Soviet citizen said, "Well, I can go to the Kremlin and go to Mr. Gorbachev's desk and say, I don't like the way President Reagan is doing his job." Well, that's the difference. You know, it's part of our tradition. Now, I don't think we should be mean and nasty, but certainly having, you know, vigorous debates about topics. I think we've also lost the ability to just debate issues without becoming so ad hominem in our attacks on one another. But it doesn't make you a bad person that you and I might disagree on some issue. Maybe we disagree on the tax rate, right? You think it should be 18%. I think it should be 23%. Well, we're not bad people. We just disagree on a tax rate. And I think we have to get that tradition back of vigorous debate. President Reagan used to tell Tip O'Neill, "Is it 6 o'clock yet?" And O'Neill would say, "Well, why?" And he said, "Well, if it's 6 o'clock, we're friends again, right? We argue and debate until 6 o'clock, then we go out for dinner and have a drink or whatever."
Well, and of course, Mark, those are... I was just talking to a relative who just turned, I think, 88 this week, and he said to me, "You know, Sandy, when I was young, the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, they would argue and fight, but it was always about the country. And I just don't know what's going on." And I said, "Really? You really don't know what's going on?" Because he pays attention to the news. And he said, "Well, maybe I do." And the point is, really, that whole quaint notion, even that Reagan expressed a Tip O'Neill, has gone, because we're dealing with a faction that wants to undermine and destroy our system of government. Versus a bunch of us who don't, who love our country, and it really hasn't got much to do with parties anymore.
But, well, you're more of a political person in Washington than I am. I'm you know, out here and making movies and such. But I would say, if I could wave my magic wand, and maybe this is unconstitutional, but if I could pass one piece of legislation, I would require that all legislators have to live full time in or near Washington D.C.
Oh,
and the
boy.
Reason is, if all legislators' families were intertwined with each other, you know, if a Republican and a Democrat member of the House, their kids are in Little League together, their wives are in community service, if the families were intertwined, there'd be a lot less yelling on TV at each other. And the problem is, everybody goes back to their district, they never see each other, and it's a lot easier to have this adversarial culture, whereas if their lives were intertwined, it would be a lot different, I think, in the tone.
Maybe. I hope so, Mark. I mean, it's a great concept, but I think we
probably
have sort of...
Probably unconstitutional.
Well, probably. But I guess the other thing is, I just think there is a wickedness that's coming, kind of bursting forth. I don't think everyone that is jumping on the wagon of denying free speech and safe spaces and all that, some of them are just people who don't know any better, and they're caught up in it, a lot of young people. But there are some nefarious characters leading the charge who can trace this whole method back to Marxism. And so that's the problem. We have seen this happen before in other cultures. It's very dangerous. So let's go back to this movie. Mark, did you know, Dennis Prager does the Prager U videos, which are so excellent and so powerful. So I'm wondering, did this idea for this particular movie come from him? Where did it come from?
Well, a colleague and I, we were talking originally with Tim Allen, the actor, about doing a film like this topic. We thought about the idea of safe spaces and what that means. And we decided to do a different film with him. And then we approached Dennis Prager and Adam Carolla about it, because they had been talking about wanting to work together too. And it just really gelled. And in particular, what I'm pleased about this film is... It truly is not an ideological film, in the sense that we've tried to find common ground that the left and the right can really agree upon. And
Mark, I'm going to interrupt you. I have to interrupt you mid-citizen, because there's the music, so we have to take a break. But
sure.
When we come back, we'll start with that, because I do want to know. What an interesting mix, for one thing. Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager, we'll talk about that. And it is true, you've woven people from all over the map into this movie, and we'll talk about that, too. My guest is producer Mark Joseph. The book is called... the film is called No Safe Spaces. Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What is most important must be spoken, made verbal White supremacy!
Who is the enemy?
White supremacy!
Who is the enemy?
White supremacy!
Who is the enemy?
White supremacy!
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was pretty stunning. That was in the spring of 2017, as I recall. Charles Murray is kind of a mild-mannered professorial writer, conservative, and he came to Middlebury College, and the response from the students was what you just heard. They chanted really Marxist slogans, and then they talked about what is who is the enemy? White supremacists are the enemy, and they accused Charles Murray of being a white supremacist, and he never even got to speak. And that was, of course, just one example of what's happening on college campuses. This new movie that's coming out is called No Safe Spaces. The hosts are Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager, a strange mix. But Adam brings a lot of humor to it, and Dennis brings his erudite and his sly, dry wit also. And the producer of the movie is Mark Joseph. So, Mark, I know that Salem does these lectures around the country where they will offer up their talk network hosts on a platform, and people will come, major cities generally speaking, and they'll sit on the platform and answer questions and talk, and it's very entertaining. I'm just wondering if this was birthed in part. Have Adam and Carolla and Dennis Prager gone out on the talk circuit and done that?
Yeah, they have. That's part of what our film covers, is we follow Adam and Dennis as they go to college campuses and other venues having a conversation. And I was just saying earlier that part of the attraction for me, I've known Adam for years, and he's a good friend, and just the fact that somebody like him, who I don't think of as a political person, right? We don't talk politics, but somebody like him can team up with somebody like Dennis and say, you know what, we have common ground here on the idea of free speech. Free speech is not a Democratic or a Republican or liberal or conservative idea. It's an idea that unites our country upon which it was founded, and that we have to get back to that. And it was really in that spirit that we have, I think you've seen some of the guests in our movie that we have Adam and Dennis speaking to, but it's really a collection of people from across the spectrum. On the left-hand side of the ledger, we have Alan Dershowitz and Van Jones and Cornel West. On the right side, we follow Ben Shapiro and Ann Coulter as they try to speak at UC Berkeley. And then people like Jordan Peterson. I'm not even quite sure where he is on the spectrum. He's Canadian. But really kind of exploring the idea of what does it mean to be for free speech, and what are the dangers ahead? I think that's the biggest thing, Sandy, is there's a tendency for people of a certain age to think, oh, those crazy college kids, they'll eventually grow up, get a minivan and a mortgage and straighten out. But the problem is, when you have upwards of 50% of young people who don't believe in the idea of free speech, and we have in the film, that's a problem, and we have in the film a really great segment where Dennis speaks to some college students, and he says, well, what kind of speech do you think we should limit? And one of them says, well, we shouldn't let Nazis talk. And Dennis, who, as you know, is Jewish, says, well, you know, I would never do that, because I'm afraid that after I stop the Nazis from talking, you know, next they'll come and stop me from talking. And that part of the wager we make, or the trade-off in our culture, is we let everybody talk, crazy people, rational people, and we answer crazy thoughts and crazy ideas with the truth. And so that very concept is under attack. And there's another great scene in the film where Alan Dershowitz says, when I'm teaching my classes on the law, I can look around my classroom and see future Supreme Court justice, future president, future manager of Goldman Sachs, and that if people who really don't believe in free speech graduate and go into positions of influence in our society, we're going to have some real problems in the next 20 years.
Well, we're already seeing that. You think about Mark Zuckerberg, who heads up Facebook and founded it, and he is really fully cooperating right now with the French he's asking for government regulation in Facebook, and of course they're already policing speech and sort of purging conservatives from Facebook. So we have that's a great example of the influence of someone who was in one of those classes, I'm sure. When he was in school, that's how he came out. He didn't care about free speech. He's not committed to it. But you also mentioned the comedians of varying stripes, from Bill Maher, who was a comedian, I guess, a caustic commentator, but funny at times. And Tim Allen, you said you have a good friendship with him. And, of course, Adam Carolla. All of them sort of had that broad spectrum of comedian humor, at least. So what, you know, I know what their concern is, but tell me, what was Tim Allen's concern and why did he participate with you?
Yeah, we had a really great segment at the Laugh Factory with Tim and Adam and a couple of other comedians, younger comedians who are coming up. And really, it was great to get their perspective. And the bottom line is comedians are terrified of going on college campuses now. Jerry Seinfeld says he's not gonna do it, period. It's just not worth it. And in the film, Tim talks about, and actually Jerry Seinfeld, we have a clip of him as well, just talking about how they make a joke and they kind of wait and the audience, it's kind of a buzz in the audience. And now the comedians are feeling uncomfortable, like everything they say is being evaluated and put under a microscope. And what did you mean by that? And what are you inferring? And it just becomes this tyrannical, feeling. And I even think back to when Ronald Reagan was elected president, he said that once he was elected, he stopped all ethnic jokes except for jokes on himself, the Irish. And again, not in defense of racist ethnic jokes, but the idea that we can't poke fun at each other. You know, I'm half Middle Eastern and half from Norway. Well, we can't crack jokes about Middle Easterners and Norwegians because we're all living in terror of being labeled something. So we've lost. There's a trade-off. We lose something when even comedians can't poke fun at us and at each other. It's just a feeling of this is not just political speech that's being impacted. It's even our funny men and women among us.
Mark, let's talk nuts and bolts for a second, because I do cover the news all the time, and there would be, like, if you and I were to talk about all the incidences that are happening on college campuses, it would be a very full show. We could just keep talking and talking. So when you start to make a movie like this, you have to gather footage, B-roll, you have to go on campuses, you have to do all kinds of things. So how in the world did you guys decide, you know, what you would include and what you would include and what you wouldn't, and how you would get that?
Sure. Well, I do both documentaries and narratives, this is really a docudrama because we have recreations with actors playing roles. We have actors playing young Dennis Prager and young Adam Carolla, for instance.
that must have been fun.
But they're very different. These kinds of movies are kind of rolling, living things that you have to constantly adapt. Frankly, when we started out, we thought we were making a movie about college campuses, and we quickly realized it was more of a movie about free speech in a larger context. So the college campus is just the on-ramp to get into this issue. Part of it was just reaching out to a lot of folks that we wanted. We got most of the guests we were looking for, not everybody, but most of them were willing to talk to us. And then really adding in, we have some animated pieces in here. We have these recreations. Young Dennis Prager goes to the Soviet Union as a 21-year-old man and really sees...
Does he see Bernie Sanders there?
Looks like up close.
Sorry, I made a bad joke. I said, did he see Bernie Sanders there, the young 21-year-old? Because Bernie Sanders went there for his honeymoon. I'm sorry.
Right. No, this is young Prager. And then, of course, we have young Adam Carolla at 12 years old, learning about life as well. And so the thing about these kinds of movies is they really have to have a lot of value for people to watch them in a theater. And so we really have to do a lot more than just have talking heads. It has to really be a piece of entertainment as well as being informative. So we work hard at that. But to answer your question, it definitely changed as we went through this process. But for me, it was always important to have people across the political spectrum really forming a consensus. And, the much of the free speech movement of the 60s was, of course, on the left, on the political left. And so people like Nat Hentoff, and there was a lot of people that I admire on the left who really truly do believe in, did believe in free speech in the case of that. And that's important to have voices from both sides.
I'm curious, you know, so you mentioned this again before, but I want to mention it again. You had Van Jones is a self-professed communist. He was on your video. Bill Maher is who Bill Maher is. We don't need to explain that. And then Cornel West, who was a radical leftist from the 60s. Also, did you have any trouble at all getting them to agree? Especially Bill Maher. I would wonder that he'd want to be, I don't know. Any problems with them agreeing to be in your film?
Yeah, we didn't actually interview Bill, so we just used some footage of one of his shows, just a very quick clip. But no, the others were great, and the conservatives were great. You know, everybody was eager to talk, for the most part, eager to talk about this issue. And I think there are clear dangers. As I said, this is more, you know, I would say it's more a problem of both the right and the left not educating the next generation about these issues. Somehow we forgot that you can't just, as Reagan used to say, freedom is not just in the bloodstream. You have to constantly reinform and educate the next generation of what this means. And so somewhere we allowed the idea to flourish that if somebody says something that I disagree with, I have the right, or makes me feel uncomfortable, I have the right to shut them up. And somehow that entered our discourse or our thinking. And again, I don't want to misconstrue this. This is not a defense of being mean to each other on Facebook, right? That's just bad manners. In particular, I have a, you know, more of an affinity just for political speech, that you should have the right to say, I this is what I believe, and great, and I can tell you that I disagree. So, you know, being civil is really a different matter. We really should all strive for civility, but this is more about, you know, vigorous discourse on issues and topics, and that's kind of what our country was founded on.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, I think, speaking of the way it was intended to work, you know, the founding fathers said that religion and morals were the foundation. They said that over and over again. Dozens of them said this because there wasn't any enough law. There wasn't any constitution, any form of government that could constrain the wickedness in man. And so religion and morality, which was self-imposed, you know, through faith, was the restraining force that made democracy work. And once we lost that, we would lose everything. And I think that is actually kind of what we're experiencing. Mark, we have not been practical at all. When is this movie? When can people see this movie?
Well, we don't have an exact date yet. We're having those conversations with distributors yet. But I would say it's safe to say in later 2019, we'll be in theaters, and look forward to sharing it. And it's a lot of fun. It sounds like a serious topic, and it sounds like it might be a downer, but it's not. We have a lot of fun doing it, and Adam makes sure that we laugh a lot. And Dennis has a more of a different kind of sense of humor, but he too is a funny guy. But
yeah,
Adam
funny.
Especially keeps us in check and makes sure that we're having fun.
Yeah, you know, you have actually excuse me. One of my favorite congressmen is in your video, and that's Jim Jordan. And it's a very short clip, but I did not realize, I don't know how I missed this, but I did not know that Adam Carolla testified before Congress. What's that all about?
That was fun. I went with him. You know, we set it up in the film as kind of a Mr. Smith goes to Washington moment, and he goes on the Kimmel show, and he gets grilled by Jimmy Kimmel about why he's going to Congress. It's almost like, are you being called into the principal's office, or are you in trouble? What, have you done something wrong? And but no, he I'll tell you a funny story. He was there with Ben Shapiro, also testified, along with some other professors and such. And I was in the green room, and of course, Shapiro, being who he is, had this neatly, you know, looked like it was single spaced, typed out speech he was going to give. And Adam is in the green room with a yellow legal pad, just jotting down some few points he wants to make. And so to watch them give their very, very different performances was pretty funny. I think Congressman Jordan said it was the first time that Wawa Wubsy had ever been mentioned in a congressional hearing. But Adam, what Adam brilliantly sketched out that day on that yellow legal pad 5 minutes before he went out there was just the idea that children, humans need gravity. When you're in space, your muscles deteriorate, and we've allowed kids to be raised in a bubble where they're protected from everything and there's no bone density. And we have to allow, kids to experience gravity, to experience the ups and downs and not just cushion everything in life for them. So that was part of the larger message. But yeah, it was quite an interesting experience, 3-hour congressional hearing. We had a lot of fun. And one of the strangest moments
hold that thought. That will be okay. Our tease for the next segment. We'll hear about that strangest moment when Adam Carolla was testifying before Congress. I don't know how I missed that. I'm really sorry I did. But the movie is called No Safe Spaces. It's not out yet, but there is a book called No Safe Spaces. There really is, in fact, a book called that. And it will be coming out shortly also. My guest is the producer of the movie, Mark Joseph, and also the writer of that book. So we'll be right back in just a second. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Hi, media. Can I talk to you?
No, you need to get out. You need to get out.
No, I don't.
You need to get out.
I actually don't.
All right. Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here.
That was interesting. That was a professor of journalism at the University of Missouri, which is renowned for its journalism school, asking for some muscle to get a reporter out. They were sort of doing as I remember, it was a hate speech rally or a safe space rally. I think they were all in a circle with tape over their mouths, as I recall. It was just, she said, we're going to call the cops. No, you can't report on this. It's very, very, very ironic. And, of course, that's what we've come to. And that's why this movie is so timely. It's called No Safe Spaces. The producer of the movie is with us, and I need to give him a decent introduction, which I have yet to do, actually. He worked for many years with Walden Media. You remember Walden produced some phenomenal films and Crusader Entertainment. He is currently producing feature films like Reagan, Token, and Lewis, Max Rose, and Silence Patton. He also produced before this Doonby and, so many things. One of them that sticks out to me is Son of God. Honestly, Mark, I loved that movie. That was one of my favorite movies about Jesus ever, ever, just for the record.
Well, yeah, I didn't produce that one, but definitely worked on the marketing on it. It was Mark Burnett and Roma Downey. I'm sure you remember them.
Yes, I do. I interviewed them on that.
Great job on that one.
I love that movie. Honestly, I just can't say enough about it. It was so moving. You also are a movie producer. I'm going to get into that in a few minutes. Let's go back to, I come back to that. I want to pick up on the tease that you gave us in the last segment. We were talking about that hearing before Congress where Adam Carolla, who is one of the co-hosts of this movie along with Dennis Prager, Adam is testifying before Congress. 3-hour hearing. Jim Jordan is there and others. You said there was a very interesting moment. What was it?
Well, it was such an interesting spectrum of people. And even in that hearing, I have to say there was a broad consensus in favor of free speech. And I know that both sides like to kind of demonize the other, but it was pretty remarkable. I didn't really hear any defense of, any criticism of free speech. Everybody likes the idea. It's just in the fleshing out the details sometimes. But, it was just a hilarious juxtaposition to have a comedian there and yet talking very seriously, but also just the way that he intersperses humor into the serious talk. So it was about 3 hours, and I had my daughter behind me, who I'd forgotten to feed breakfast to. So we're in there for a 3-hour hearing with no breakfast and very cold. And so you can see my daughter behind Adam wilting. So that was my bad dad day.
How old was she then?
Oh, she was probably about 16 or so.
Okay.
I've been reprimanded since then by my wife.
That reminds me, Mark, I'm having trouble here. your daughter then is ripe for college. So in the making of this film, did your attitude or perspective of sending your kids to colleges and universities change in any way?
That's a great question. Yeah, I have two in that age bracket. I think it just has made me to be more aware of what's happening. And, you know, I would say across the political spectrum, whatever your views are, in particular those that give to universities, the big donors, not very smart to be giving and not be aware of what's happening on that college campus. And again, whatever your beliefs are, chances are the college that you went to is not the same as it was when you were there. And so I think to be more aware of what's happening, and because of the internet now, you can easily find out what's happening at your alma mater or the place that your kids are thinking of going to. So it's really incumbent to go and look and see what's happening in the student paper, and just make sure that it's the kind of place that you, A, want to support, and B, you know, want to entrust your kids to. I think it's made me more vigilant and more aware, and there's really no excuse these days to not know what's going on.
No, that's true. And, you know, you are in California, and so you're, I don't know, Mark, you guys are always ahead of the curve in all of the best ways and all the worst ways. Yeah, you know, I remember California in its glory days. I do, because my father's family, we used to go all the time, and it was just gorgeous. California was the most incredible state. It still is. Visually, it is. It's just gorgeous. There's no state like it in terms of variety and terrain. But, of course, at the time, it was clean and orderly, had great governance. It was on the cutting edge of, you know, Ronald Reagan came from, I need to tell you this, you probably don't know, that Ronald Reagan came from California. But California has changed so much, and now you're raising your children there, and you're also right in the thick of Hollywood. So you must see this whole free speech thing playing out even in your kids right now, and even in your own industry.
Sure, and you know, part of that heritage of California you're talking about, believe it or not, it was a pretty bipartisan deal, right? Where Californians would elect Jerry Brown, and they would elect Ronald Reagan, and before that was Governor Edmund Brown, you know, Jerry Brown's father, George Duke Majian. It would go back and forth. So I would say it wasn't even really a partisan thing. Both parties were kind of within the realm of normalcy, even though you might disagree with each other. There was a kind of a spirit of bipartisanship. And there's something healthy about that, right? And even in our presidential elections, we kind of lurch back and forth. I noticed that Wisconsin recently, there was a Supreme Court race that just after electing a Democratic governor, they then swing the other way on the judge race. And so there's something very yin and yang about the electorate where we don't want one party to go too far and we rope them back. And California's kind of lost that now. The Republican Party doesn't really exist. There's supermajorities in both houses. And so, you know, I'm of the persuasion that it's healthy to have that yin and yang, that balance of right and left, that we do keep the excesses in check, or the electorate does. And so anytime one party becomes too dominant, I'm not sure it's terribly healthy for the overall democracy. So it's probably going to be healthier if the Republicans regain some kind of footing so they can be competitive. But I don't know how that's going to happen. They don't seem to be very powerful in California. But in general, you know, we're a country that goes from Barack Obama to Donald Trump, and I think that probably explains it all.
Yes, well, that's yes. And I think we're going the way of California where there's not going to be a choice. But I'm asking particularly about this whole notion of not being able to say what you think, not feeling free to do that. Are you feeling that pressure in California,
yeah,
especially
well,
in your industry?
Well, let me tell you, one of the stories we have in the film is a UC Berkeley student named Isabella Chow. I believe she's about 21 years old. And frankly, she's more courageous than most of us who made the film. But we wanted to follow her, not in particular because of what she believed or didn't believe, but the way she did it. There was a piece of legislation or a sense of the Senate that was passed in the what do you call it, the student assembly, I guess it is. And she didn't go along with it. It was something about a resolution condemning Donald Trump for something. And she actually abstained from it and was roundly condemned and demanded that she resign and just had a real kind of a circus there. And she just calmly said, no, you know, I'm not going to resign. I was elected to represent my constituency, and this is what I believed. And she was very respectful about it. But we have footage of the event and hundreds of people sort of yelling at her and saying, you must quit. And again, just the ways that she conducted herself, I really admired that and just thought that she's an interesting prototype or a role model of young people who are, we focused a lot on the negative things, but that was an example of somebody who just stood up for what she believed and wasn't going to be moved at all.
You know, I was at CPAC, and I don't know if you know what that is. That's the big conservative political action camp gathering that happens in Washington. It's 10,000 people this past year, so it's big. It's big, and the president usually does speak there, and all kinds of people. But the thing I noticed this year, Mark, was there was a huge group of young people who seem to have found their voice and are kind of old beyond their years. I think of Charlie Kirk, Turning Point USA, but lots of others who have found their voice, and they are in many ways on college campuses on the front lines of all the problems we're having in this culture. You know, schools have become the battleground, even grade schools and high schools. And so now in colleges, it's kind of reaches the tipping point where it's full-throated Marxism suppression. And so the kids kind of go, either they cave or they get stronger. And I think we are producing some remarkably strong kids. Now, this movie is called No Safe Spaces. When you laid out the plan here, how you have to think about your audience. That's what marketers do. That's what you're probably the very best at. So who do you think the audience is going to be for this?
That's a great question. I think where there's two or three distinct audiences. The first, I think, are going to be college students themselves, high school, college age. And so we definitely have some things in here that we think will attract them and interest them. And then the sort of the older folks, maybe AARP, maybe retirement, who are concerned about those kids, their grandparents, basically. So I think it's in some ways it's younger folks and their grandparents. Now, in the middle of that, of course, are their parents. So sounds like I'm covering all the generations, but I think somewhere in that order, I don't know which is which, but there's going to be, I think, interest among people who are in the middle of it, people who are looking back, hoping to leave a better world to their grandkids, and then the parents right in the middle, sort of Gen Xers and baby boomers who are too busy to think about this stuff right now because they're working every day. And also their parents that are sending their kids off to college. So that's three very, very broad demographics, and we'll see kind of which tilts toward which and which is the stronger one.
So if you were to, in a perfect world, this would be in movie theaters. Would you also, you want media, you want, what do you call that, secondary media? I can't think of the name, earned media. And so
right.
Hollywood Reporter has done a feature. I tried to find an article. I saw they posted your trailer. Have they given you any air support yet, or do you think they will?
Well, sure. I mean, they're an industry publication, and so Variety and the Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and the Wrap, these all tend to cover us. And so it's really about if interesting things happen along the way, which we never know what's going to happen like that. But sure.
Something's going to. You can take that to the bank.
Right,
the opposition
right.
to this movie. You can count on that for your earned media.
That's right. Yeah, we expect things that will happen along the way. But we have a lot of fun doing it. And so we're looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next.
If you were to add anything, you know, usually you finish a movie and then you think, oh, gee, I wish we'd known about that. We would have put that in there. Is there something that you would add if you could?
Sure. There are some folks that we would have liked to have interviewed that were not available. I would have loved to have had Bill Maher us be able to do an interview. We have Adam, probably have Adam talk to Bill, and then also have Adam talk to Jerry Seinfeld. But that didn't come about. But that would have been a lot of fun. And But, you know, for the most part, we pretty much have the movie we were hoping for, and that's not always the case. So we're excited about it.
All right, so the movie is called No Safe Spaces. It's going to be out this year, probably later this spring, so you'll want to be watching for it. Again, it's co-hosted by Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager. I'm curious about, we're almost out of time here, but Adam Carolla, I know he has a very interesting entertainment past. A Christian audience might not embrace a lot of things Adam has done, but he is hilarious. Does he have a family, do you know?
He does. He has two beautiful children, twins, a beautiful wife. He's got a great family. And he claims to be an atheist, but I'm pretty sure he's an agnostic.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different. So,
yeah.
But he's listens to Dennis religiously. And by the way, interesting that Adam has been a longtime fan of Christian radio. He loves to listen to different points of view. And so when somebody comes to their point of view in that way, after listening to lots of points of view, I have a great respect for that.
Yeah. All right, Mark Joseph, it's been a pleasure. The movie is called No Safe Spaces. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.